On the show this week, a former guest of mine here from way back when the show was based off of my own personal website at tjmacklin.com. Now we've migrated over to Place to Be Nation, where the show is always found at, and their wonderful network podcast here. But a good friend, I would say, through many Google chats, tweets back and forth, primarily me needling him during the Seahawks season. I'm still waiting for when Russ Wilson goes down and they have to turn to Brady Quinn as their backup quarterback, which I'm not even sure the Seahawks even have Brady Quinn as the backup quarterback anymore. But a former writer for Grantland, now you can find him a whole bunch of places, writing, doing stuff like Forbes, his work out of L.A. as well. Spike Freedom. Spike, you're in L.A. now, no longer in Seattle. So let me ask you this. How much nicer is it being in a place where it's not raining every day of the week?
74% nicer.
74, that's good.
I would say 74% nicer, yeah.
So
and it's, I believe Trevon Boykin is number two on the depth chart right now. TCU,
okay.
Former Horned Frog legend.
Really?
So you want to, yeah. I'm excited to see Russell Wilson get injured. Now, not through. I didn't say that on the record. I'm knocking on wood. Oh boy.
Because I think the last time you and I talked on a medium, as in podcasting form, it was, I think, right after Brady Quinn got hired as the backup. So that kind of dates of how long it's been.
That was a while ago, and then I don't even think he ever was on an active roster for the team. I think that they keep bringing in guys where you're like, that's horrifying. And then they're like, no, it's Tavares Jackson. Don't worry about it. And you're like, that's still horrifying. Russell Wilson can't get hurt. Oh, my God.
So I got a neighbor here in Austin, Texas. Big Pats fan. Was very happy whenever, you know, the Patriots beat the Seahawks in the Super Bowl. God, was that? That was 2 years ago. It feels like last year. Two years.
Yeah.
Because when you have a kid, time kind of stands still.
It feels like literally never to me because of that lobotomy I got.
Yeah, I guess the curtains closed and credits ran after Seymour. You did the whole flashing, 21-10 or whatever it was?
Oh, I don't remember exactly.
We don't. My apologies. I was segueing. That's not where we are. Oh, go ahead.
No. I was just laughing at, like, oh my God. I was actually having a conversation a couple days ago. It's like, yeah, like, we're all over it. None of us are the same. And well, I was actually talking about it in terms of, like, if the Warriors somehow lose this finals, it'll be like the Seahawks losing that Super Bowl, where it's like they escape the conference title game where they're down big, come back, win it, they get the lead, and they've got, you know, but it doesn't look quite right, and then it starts slipping away from them, and all of a sudden the Hall of Famer on the other team starts putting up historic performances, and you're like, oh, no. So I think that the way that has to go is it's the Warriors, it's like they're down by two, but somehow, like, there's a weird technical at the end, and they give the free throws, but they don't give them to Steph, they give them to Sean Livingston for some reason, and he bricks all three. And it's like, hand the ball to Steph!
No.
So I think that that's where we're going.
No, in that case situation, they'd be hanging with the Iguodala, and just as, like, oh, yeah, Iguodala, plenty fine.
Oh, God.
But what I was going to say with that question is, you know, with the Pats, and they can lose a receiver and they gain some other random white guy and it replaces who they just left with Amendola to Welker and whatnot. Is that the same way you feel with your Seahawks secondary, where you can just lose someone and another 6'3" safety is just going to fall out of the sky and replace that person that just left?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Kelsey McCray, who we picked up from Kansas City for a fifth-round pick last year to be, like, a special teams guy. And everybody was like, what? Fifth-round pick? That seems a little much for, like, Kelsey McCray, who no one's heard of, when, like, a decent quarterback will go for a sixth-round pick because
right.
In the NFL are super weird. And then McCray steps in when Chancellor's not playing and arguably outplays Chancellor. The other weird part of it is now we're bringing Brandon Browner back, because the one thing the Seahawks can't do is go get some random dude in the middle of his career. They bring in a Kerry Williams and he falls apart. So you need to get him either very young or very old, and then Pete Carroll can mold them into the perfect defensive player.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, speaking of getting someone kind of in the middle of their career, Jimmy Graham, you know, he had that terrible knee injury against the Steelers last year during that great game, even though my Steelers ended up losing that game. It still was a phenomenal one to watch. You know, your expectations as a Seahawks fan, you know, are what, seeing that you saw 13 games of them last year?
Here's the thing is I both thought that Jimmy Graham's performance last season was a little underrated. I thought he was actually really good and was starting to really fill in some holes in that Seahawks offense and really draw a lot of attention in ways that opened things up for Doug Baldwin to put together a Pro Bowl caliber season. You know, he's not the perfect weapon for a guy like Russell Wilson, but I thought he was very good before he was injured, except for like one awful game that got everybody turning against him. But on the whole, it was fine. The thing that I've got a problem with is the severity of that knee injury. The patellar tendon isn't an ACL, and bringing him back in theoretically 10 months for an injury that really should take 16 to 18 to heal makes me very nervous. And if you were to offer me a bet right now on what week he plays first, over under on like week 3 or 4, I would take the over. You know, and I think there are a lot of Seahawks fans who are super optimistic he's going to be playing week 1, because that's what Pete Carroll said, that's what John Snyder said. But, like, Pete Carroll is a very optimistic dude, and I don't take his optimism on health at face value, especially since he has a history of overrating guys' rate of return, like Paul Richardson last year. He was like, yeah, I'll be back week 1. Then he came back week 8 and played, like, 2 games and then immediately tore his hamstring. And you're like, not only did he not make it back on Pete Carroll's optimistic timeline, but they still were rushing him back, and then he got hurt. And so I wouldn't be shocked to see Graham have that sort of year this year, which is a bummer because, again, I thought he was actually pretty good last year. And weirdly, there's a lot of Seahawks fans who are equally worried about Thomas Rawls, the running back coming back, but I think Rawls will play week 1. I really do. So we'll see. Oh, this is one where I'd love to be wrong. I'd love to see Jimmy Graham come back week 1 and be Jimmy Graham, but no.
Well, speaking of those running backs, you know, you said Carroll's a little too optimistic for his own good, which you always see him in interviews, and he is the actual smiling-go-lucky, happy coach, unlike the other brooding coaches in the in the NFL. Or Omar Epps, who works the Steelers head coach, who's just a method actor, who's just waiting for that next big NFL movie that's going to come out. But, you know, if you ask Carroll right now, do you think Lynch is retired, he says what?
Oh, he's definitely retired, and I 100% believe that. Like, Marshawn is done. If you watched him last year, he wasn't the same player. It was a pretty amicable end of the career. It all seemed like it wasn't amicable in the playoffs last year, but everything that's happened in the offseason has been an amicable separation. The team drafted, like, 96 running backs. They've got Thomas Rawls, who was the league leader in yards per carry last year. You know, they've got a bunch of different types of options to surround him. So they don't really need Marshawn. What they do need is to sort out an offensive line that has the most potential that a Seahawks offensive line has had in a few years, but also somehow manages to have the most downside of any offensive line the Seahawks has put together in a few years. That includes last year's offensive line, which for the first 6 weeks was easily the worst in the NFL.
Interesting. Here, I thought someone else like the Rams would have been around there. Or, hell, even the Saints, because it seemed like every week Breeze was on his back just getting crushed. Let me ask you this. With L.A., speaking of the Rams here, I don't know, go ahead. What you were about to say with Breeze and whatnot?
Oh, just that, like, Breeze is a beast last year. It's just this, you know, they were constantly down by
that too.
28. 35, 59, 700. Like, when you know exactly what the other team has to do because they have to throw the ball, like, he's getting knocked over. The things that Russell Wilson was seeing before the Seahawks shifted their line and put Patrick Lewis at center when they had Drew Novak there, he was seeing some horrifying months. It was like he was going up against the Monstars in space.
See, offline, I thought we were going to stay away from the Space Jam.
That's right. We said we weren't going to talk Space Jam.
We were going to stay away, which I can easily divulge into how, like I said to you, Kevin Hart will play every role in the new Space Jam movie, including LeBron James's role of the Michael Jordan role. But actually, you know, when I was thinking, who would be the Newman role as the angry, fat, white comedian that would come in? And I can only think of Kevin James or Chris Farley's brother.
Oh, wow. Yeah, Kevin James is actually a pretty good call. As like a comedy nerd, the guy who I would want to see and who I think would do a great job with it is Bobby Moynihan. I think Bobby Moynihan would kill that role. And I think he'd actually do better than Wayne Knight, who is like a little too good of an actor to play against Michael Jordan, who's just a dumpster fire of an actor. Whereas, like, LeBron's a little better on camera than Jordan was, and Bobby is more of, like, an improviser comedian type, so I think he'll be able to get on LeBron's level more quickly. So that's my pitch, Bobby Moynihan for Space Jam 2.
For the Bill Murray role, who comes in at the last second and just hits three-pointers, I say you bring back 75-year-old Bill Murray to fill that role.
Yeah, I was going to say, why not Murray?
Yeah.
A lot of continuity there. His storyline about wanting to play in the NBA in Space Jam is so tacked on, and somehow in a movie where Michael Jordan is dribbled as a basketball by aliens powered by Danny DeVito and Larry Johnson somehow in conjunction, the notion that Bill Murray wants to be an NBA player is the most ludicrous thing in that film.
I think there's a throwaway line in there where they're all golfing, and it's him, Jordan, and Bird, and Murray says, "Hey, do I have a shot?" And then Jordan goes, "No one." Bill goes, "It's because I'm white, isn't it?" That how does that line play in today's world?
It doesn't play great. You know what plays even worse? Is Bugs Bunny lecturing Michael Jordan about the perils of slavery? It's really, really not woke. It's the most white mansplaining situation I've ever fucking seen on film. Unbelievable.
Apparently, when that movie came out in, 94, 95, my 12-year-old self missed that connection.
Yeah, no, me too. Oh, this was only a recent rewatch that got me there. You were going to ask me about the Rams. You were going to ask me about real sports. We can go back.
Oh, my goodness. Or just how Daffy Duck always gets crapped on as the only black Looney Tunes character.
Yeah, I mean, that's a little... Because at that point, they're all voiced by Billy West, which is also super weird. Because, like, A, that voice is wrong, but B, he's a great voice actor. He's just like, what... Oh, it's so ill-conceived.
Right. Last thing here on the potential Space Jam 2. LeBron's kind of heavier set friend that is just there for comic relief and one-liners, Rod Funchess.
Oh, yeah. Funchess would be great. Funchess is hilarious.
Yeah, he's
nothing but love for that choice.
He's a little he's heavier set. You know, he can be there as the comedic relief. You know, during the big Monstars game, he can just throw one-liners from the stands. Maybe as him and LeBron are hanging out, just always says he can always beat LeBron one-on-one. Just ways that he can, you know, still act. And you see him, and you're like, hey, you're probably extremely high while recording this. You probably think there's actually Looney Tunes around you right now.
Yeah. Yeah, it really adds a level of verisimilitude to the film that otherwise wouldn't be there.
Yeah, right. Good. I'm glad we could fit that in from there. So segue here, bringing back Seattle-wise, because you, as a lifelong Seattle fan, as we're recording, I do have my Seattle Supersonics T-shirt on. I do. It's a shirt that my sister-in-law just happened to be in a Seattle airport visiting friends, and she's like, I need to find something for my brother-in-law. Here, random kiosk that just has a green Seattle Supersonics shirt, and I wear it like it's something I would find at a Kardashian store for $500. That's how much with pride I wear it as. But what the hell is wrong with the sport leagues that they keep on passing over your city for an NBA and even now an NHL franchise as they choose Vegas over Seattle or Quebec?
Well, we blew it a little bit recently. So Chris Hansen had financing lined up and a deal for a stadium. It was still going to be complicated and difficult to get it all done, but a recent city council vote up here pretty much torpedoed it because they needed to take a public, like, sort of alley and turn that into a, like, part of the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And that got voted down by the city council. And then there was, like, a really ugly thing that happened because it was voted down on gender lines where, like, they started getting harassed by dudes on Twitter. Which,
yeah,
like, naturally,
I remember about that.
So, like, and so the merits of the vote sort of slipped away. It's a bummer. I think that Chris Hansen deal is a pretty good stadium deal, but it's pretty dead now. And you can get the feeling with the NHL that once they saw that, they were willing to wait on Seattle to get their stuff together.
Right.
If it looked like there was momentum, but when that momentum stopped, they're like, well, all right, if it was Seattle or Vegas, we're going to go to Vegas because Seattle's not going to have it together in the next 4 years. And so it's a bummer because it felt tantalizingly close.
Right.
But at the same time, like, the city's got some good sports teams and the Mariners. You know, like, things are fine here. Like, I don't know, like, the level of vitriol is so high on stuff like this where I'm like, I want this to happen, but, like, the other people who want this to happen are so angry right now. Wow. It's a bummer. So, like, I feel like, but that's standard. That's every fan base. So I think the big answer is the stadium wasn't coming. And that sucks because it was a rare case where the stadium was going to be largely exclusively privately funded, largely privately financed. There were going to be some bond issues, but all the money was coming from the ownership group and not from the taxpayers. Yep. And so the fact that that didn't get through is a bummer.
That's such a shame because, Seahawks, they're known for the 12th man. I don't care if Texas A&M has a trademark or whatever. We think of 12th man, you think of the Seahawks and raising the flag before every game. Mariners as well, they have their fans. But what really sticks out is the MLS, the Sounders up there. It seems like hockey and soccer, it translates a lot to where you can watch it on TV and it's fine. You know, it's a good sport to watch. But when you're there in the arena or stadium, it's a whole other experience. And I feel like the Seattle soccer fans could really transition and migrate over to the AHL team that would have been there. Am I wrong to think that?
No, not at all. I think that there's a big cadre of fans ready for that. There's also a lot of transplants from, like, Boston and the Midwest here who are ready for hockey and understand it. And with the soccer thing, like, a big thing with the Sounders is they became an MLS team the same year the Sonics left. And so there was that, like, repository of, like, passion that they became, like, where, like, Sonics fans were like, all right, let's do this. Let's do soccer. And it's been really great. The U.S. men's national team is actually playing here tonight as part of the Copa America. And it's a bit of a bummer because, like, to get into the stadium, tickets start around $100.
Oh.
And it's just like, man, if you priced that at, like, $40, you would have a sellout of people singing the whole game. And you could have $100, like good seats. You could have $200 good seats. Right. Like, there are people in Seattle who pay that, but, like, the upper deck is not going to be sold out, and that sucks because, like, it's U.S. men's national team in a major tournament quarterfinals in a city where the only thing keeping people out of the stadium is the price, and the price is too high. The price is as high as Seahawks tickets, or if not higher.
Right.
Like, I was looking at some of them. Like, these are higher than some Seahawks games, and that's crazy. Because as good as the U.S. men's national team is and as fun as they are, we're for it all. You know, they're not the Seahawks right now at all. They're not close because, like, the Seahawks are the best, except for the Patriots. And then the U.S. men's national team is, like, the 20th best team.
Right. It'd be like if you priced your tickets that high for a Minnesota Vikings game where they can get hot and make a run, but more likely they're going to finish 8-8.
Or it's like doing it for, like, you know, a high school or college game where, it'd be like pricing out your student section.
Right.
Like, why would you do that? Why wouldn't you want, And it's not like by selling, like, you know, cheaper tickets in the upper deck, you know, like, it's not like you have to then raise the prices down below. It's like you get, you just fill up the upper deck. It's a huge stadium. It holds 70,000 people. There are 70,000 soccer fans in Seattle. Get them to your stadium.
Yeah.
It just bums me out.
Or hell, transplant them in from Portland, because your Portland-Seattle rivalry, it only separates you guys for about like an hour, 2 hour car ride.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, well, no, it's more, yeah, 2.5, 3 hours. But, yeah, people travel all the time. Like,
yeah.
That's not a big trip for a soccer fan.
Right. It's a doable trip. It's like going from here in Austin to Dallas. It's doable. You know, it might be a hike, but, you know, you can make it and make a day out of it and whatnot. Let me ask this about the Copa, because I want to talk about that with you, because, as you know, you're as big of a soccer fan as I know of, which I got an ESPN update as being a Liverpool fan. Balotelli, his contract will be shipped off some Turkish ball club, because that's where you go whenever no English Premier League team wants you anymore. You go to Turkey, I guess. You know, you just ship you off.
Yeah.
But with the Copas compared to the Euros, which are going on at the same time now, it seems like the Euros are a lot easier not only to find but watch and also to follow than Copa, because it's on ESPN compared to Fox Sports. Am I wrong for thinking that, or is that the general consensus?
No, you're not. I really don't like using Fox's online platform for streaming. You know, watching ESPN isn't great, but it's pretty good, and it's ESPN, so it's front and center.
Right.
And, you know, for me, my favorite of all the online services is NBC's Premier League. I think, and what they do for hockey, too, is really good. I think their online services are really good. There's also the historical importance of the Euro tournament and what it's been. It's been the best tournament in world football because it hasn't diluted itself. That said, this year they expanded the field to 24 teams from 16.
Right.
They did dilute themselves a little bit, which is like a bummer. But then on the Copa side, this is a weird one. It's, they usually do Copas in odd number of years, but they moved this one, brought it to America, did it as this 100-year anniversary thing, but it's really sort of a cash grab situation.
Mm.
And so there's that, too, where it's like, there's like a little bit of like, is this legit? Why is this happening right now? Whereas the Euros are like very legit. You've got brand name players all over the place. With the Copa, you have brand name players on Argentina, but I mean, Brazil's already out.
Right.
The U.S. doesn't really, like, there's some interesting young talents on the U.S. team. John Brooks looks like a beast at center back and is going to be playing in the Bundesliga next year. Christian Pulisic is a winger on Dortmund. You know, he's 17. He's going to be great. Bobby Wood's going to be in the Bundesliga. Fabian Johns, you know, like, I think the men's national team does have a little more talent than the most cynical among us, U.S. men's national fans, give them credit for. But it's not like Germany, where their B team is exclusively Bundesliga first teamers.
Are us Americans, are we going to be shocked when the Rio Olympics come up in about a month and we realize the U.S. men's soccer team didn't qualify for it? Or do you feel like we kind of already know and don't really care because there's so much other stuff going on at the Olympics?
I feel like there's so much other stuff going on. Plus, it's a U23 tournament.
And oh,
like,
interesting.
So who cares? Like the Olympics isn't going to be these same national teams that are playing in the Euros. They're going to be kids. And so, like, yeah, and also it's like Olympic soccer. Like, it's like a cool thing on the women's side. They bring better teams. But on the men's side, I don't know. It's a little like Olympic basketball in that, like, it's cool. It happened. A better nation than us will win, and that's fine.
Right.
And B, a better nation in terms of footballing. I don't want to anger. You know, I don't want to anger anybody out there. But it isn't the one. Like, you know, Steph Curry's not going to go to Brazil.
You know,
like, but he's going to play through a knee injury in the NBA Finals.
Right.
Similarly, like, a Champions League final matters more than the Olympics. The Euro Cup matters more than the Olympics. So I think, who cares?
So if, like, say, Ronaldo right now for Portugal, if he had a bum heel, you know, he's going to gut out and try to get Portugal out of the out of the pool play and go to a knockout round and go for a title there. But if the chance came for him to go play for the Rio Olympics, he'd go, yeah, no, I'm going to go on my private yacht in Ibiza and go chill out with a bunch of supermodels.
Yeah, I mean, he isn't even going to be put on that team because, again, it's a kid's team.
Oh, correct. And, correct.
Yeah, no, exactly. But exactly, like, if Ronaldo's not, like, it's tough to sell. It's tough to be mad about not being in a tournament where, like, your best players wouldn't be there anyway.
Right.
And so I just, like, can't get too worked up about it.
Plus, if you're that nation.
I can't.
And if you're that nation that knocks out Brazil, you don't want to be the fans that have to be in Olympic Park after your team beats Brazil.
Yeah, it was funny being down there for the World Cup. They were like, man, we don't want to play Germany. Yeah. Like the fans I talked to knew. They knew what was coming. They're like, maybe we can get lucky. And obviously they didn't. They lost 7-1. But, like, so that was actually the right – because, like – Brazilian soccer fans are pretty smart about soccer.
Right.
They're not going to, like, overreact. That said, if you are Argentina and you knock Brazil out, that's a different story and is a horrifying nightmare. So as long as Argentina doesn't do it, it'll be fine.
That's interesting that you say that. I forgot that you were down in Brazil for the World Cup. So on the Olympics and, you know, everybody's full fear and the, you know, whatever they're building up in their head of what to expect down in Rio in about a month, you know, is it live up to the hype or is it, you know, they have nothing to worry about and it's going to be fine and everything's going to go off without a hitch?
I think it's going to be a disaster.
Okay.
I was in Rio and, so here's the thing. The World Cup is like soccer tournament being played at 9 stadiums. It's like 50 total matches. Like, Brazil can handle a bunch of soccer matches in a bunch of different cities.
Right.
They do that all the time. Rio was not, had nothing ready in 2014.
Oh, wow.
There was no indication that the Olympics were coming, none whatsoever, that I could see wandering around the city. They had, like, one new subway line that was maybe going to, you know, like, but they were not ready at all. They were, like, pretty prepared to have a big soccer tournament happen at their stadium that has existed for 100 years.
Right.
But they were in no way prepared for the Olympics. So I was down there. I'm like, and then you throw an infectious disease scare on top of that. And I'm like, this isn't good. This is not ideal, guys. Is it going to be a disaster? And that, like, I don't know what scale disaster qualifies as a disaster, but is it going to go off without a hitch the way the World Cup did? I'd be surprised.
So it could be like when a bunch of riders went over for Sochi and, in 2014, I think is when the Winter Olympics were. Yeah, 2014. And hotels weren't finished, working water wasn't running, and, like, some toilets didn't have stalls. Could it be like that, or just, like, they're doing the rowing, and next thing you know, you see a corpse floating next to the Ukraine rower?
I think this is going to qualify as a little worse than Sochi, mostly because it's happening in a real city.
Okay,
and, like, Rio's a big-ass city. And so you're just like, you can't just, like, hide the problems behind a curtain, but they're going to try to, and that's going to get ugly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it isn't like on the other side of the curtain in Sochi, there isn't anybody there. But the other side of the curtain in Rio are millions of people.
Right.
And so what could happen could get really bad. Hopefully, my upside for this Olympics is that it's like Sochi.
So kind of like Sochi is kind of like being on a soundstage at a TV studio where they have the set built and you think there's like 100 people there at the set, but really behind the curtain it's just Todd from at Craft Services eating a donut.
Yeah, man, and Todd is killing it.
Okay, so got you here on the back half of the show after the Olympics and the sports talk and whatnot. I want to close here talking about what you're doing in L.A. with your comedy, your writing. You used to work with Grant Land. Used to write the wonderful part, the About Last Night, which is how I came onto your writing and became a fan of your work. Because even to this day, I think it's, 4 years later, and I still bring up the New York Knicks couple and the WASPY folks out of Connecticut. Because you did that about 4 years ago, right?
Yeah, it was. We stopped doing that. I started about. I took over from Shane Ryan like a little over. About four years in January. I can't remember.
Right.
And then did it for about 2 years. Yeah. And Shane Ryan, credit to him, did it for the first 18 months.
Oh wow.
And was also hilarious. And I love Shane Ryan's writing. And people should read his book on golf, which he sent me a copy of. And I read the first two-thirds of and then forgot to finish until, like, a month ago. And I had to, like, shamefully G-chat him, like, hey, Shane, I forgot to finish your book, but I just did, and it ended well.
It's like golf. That's just like golf right there. You play the first about 9 to 12 holes, and you think you're going to finish, but then by 13, you're like, fuck it, I'm done. I just want to get the hell off this course.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't need to read about the Ryder Cup. The Ryder Cup is the 16th, and it's a dogleg par 4, and you're like, ugh. I don't even know where the hole is. I don't care. Just whack it in the trees, and we'll go get drunk.
Oh, my God. I got a good – so whacking a tree, I crushed a guy in the back of a head by accident, about 180 yards out, hit a 7-iron, so I thought I was going to be short. And it turns out I hit this, like, 50 to 60-year-old Vietnamese guy who just came over the hill.
Oh, no.
Yeah, as I'm sitting in a golf cart, my buddy's behind me. I mean, my buddy Matt was behind me. My buddy Joe was on the green as he saw the ball go sailing over the hole and go crack the guy in the back of the skull. And he's just yelling at me, "Do you not know what four is?" And I'm thinking, the number,
yeah.
The word. Am I going to have to, like, say sorry? Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So,
well, that's not ideal.
No, it was not. And I stayed probably about 50 yards away in my golf cart from him because I knew if I went up there, I was going to get Bob Barker, you know, beaten up on a golf course of just this old senior citizen pummeling me because I almost skull killed him with a golf ball from about. And I was upset too because not only did I hit him, but it was a pretty good golf shot that I happened to sail over the green. It just so happened his skull got in the way of me, you know, having a nice chip on for a birdie.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like he's the real villain in the story.
He is.
The guy who you domed with a golf ball.
Yeah. Even the marshal came up later. Is like, did you say something? And we're like, no, because it's blind. He's like, all right, well, just watch out in case he comes back and tries to roll on you guys later on. I'm like, yep, 10-4. We'll keep an eye on it. But,
yeah, Jesus.
But anyway, so Grantland, when it came to an end, it came to an end abruptly. Were you still a part of the writing stacks? I know you're doing some work with soccer here and there, but what you weren't doing about last night.
I was just freelancing at that point. And I worked mostly with Chris Ryan, who's doing a great job over on After the Thrones.
Yeah.
And he left a couple weeks before the whole site wound down. So as far as I was, you know, like from my end, I was no longer really connected with it as of a few weeks ahead of time. And I think, you know, like, it was abrupt, but also when Chris and Sean and some of those other guys left, it made it tough. But the whole thing, you know, there are a lot of postmortems out there right now, especially with The Ringer launching. And a lot of those guys are working over at The Ringer and doing really cool work.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, you know, like, It's easy to see, you know, either corporate villainy or it was someone's fault. But it's also, like, the bigger thing at play is, like, I don't think it was making the money it could have made, which was, A, pissing some people off, but, B,
that's
like, ESPN isn't making the money it was making 10 years ago in terms of just being a pure profit machine because
right.
people are cutting the cords.
Right.
And I think, like, it was amazing that Grantland lasted as long as it did. And honestly, I'm amazed with what some of the guys are doing over at MTV News, what Fearman and those guys are doing, and then what The Ringer's putting together. It's a really tough economic situation that people are in right now in media. It's really tough to generate revenue. It's really tough to get revenue going to really good writing. And I think it's really cool that sort of the legacy of this site is people sort of scattered to the wind, but also, like, grouped in a couple, like, places with well-funded operations doing really nice work. So I think it's, you know, you don't want to, like, say that it worked out better or whatever,
right.
but I think enough people landed on their feet in really good ways, and I think that the work that's happening out there now is pretty cool. So, I don't know. That's
sort of my thoughts on it.
You got a point there, because a lot of the writers I follow from that site, you included, but Jonah Carey's doing his great stuff over at CBS Sports and also MLB Network. Down Goes Brown. You know, he is doing some great stuff as well. I mean, he pops up with Vice Sports and some stuff over at the CBC and just everywhere. He's popping up. So it does seem like it was a good launching point for a lot of your guys' careers.
Yeah, and, like, for me, I've been a playwright, and, like, I got a job at Grantland as a comedy writer more than as a journalist, so I was always a little bit of a square peg. But moving down to L.A. and doing some writing and getting some work, like, in dramatic writing and TV stuff, like, it carries a lot of currency because people read it and get what it was all about.
Yeah.
And so even if you aren't going into, like, long-form journalism, like, having worked there or just even having read it, it is still a community that's got cool currency. And so, I don't know. And, like, and I'm really glad that the archives are still there, because I'll go back. What did I go back? Oh, I read Ben Lindbergh's piece on Derek Jeter's aging and defense. And it's such a good piece. It's such a really great piece. And I'm so glad that it's all still up there, and that any, like, vindictiveness or anger that happened at the time didn't, like, get rid of these archives of great writing.
So I can go back and read about Crazy Brian Cashman then, right?
Oh, yeah, Crazy Brian Cashman's still up. You still got the Knicks couple there, you know, or the Knicks dad and son.
Yep.
And then the Connecticut couple. Man, I once got a Facebook message from Gino Auriemma's daughter.
Whoa.
Furious with me. Because she's like, why aren't you taking women's basketball seriously? You wrote this whole thing. I'm like, I got to be like, okay, I'm not the basketball writer here. I'm doing a bit about, like, how people in Connecticut behave in John Cheever novels.
Right.
Like, this is a joke. I'm not, like, maligning your father's good name.
Right.
And also, by the way, I'm leading off with a women's basketball story. What do you want? Like, I'm doing the thing. Why are you yelling at me on the internet? But it turns out people yell at each other on the internet all the time.
That is crazy that I can't even say his last name, Orietta, his daughter trolled you. That goes up there with,
yeah.
I would put that under my writer credential right there. I got trolled by This Is Us.
Yeah. It's a special skill on my resume.
That is very
getting cool.
That is very impressive. Oh, and the other character I can think of is Tuukka Rask, only being able to say his last name, and that's it.
I'm not going to lie. I ended up doing a lot of name bits in hockey because, like, I'm getting better at watching hockey. And congratulations, by the way, on your Penguins.
That's right.
And, like, I felt like watching that Stanley Cup final, I was like, oh, I get why they're better. Because, like, they're crisper, and when they pass the puck, it goes where they want it. That's cool. I have a really nice TV now, so I can see all of this. But I felt like in a position where, like, the joke that, like, people don't know hockey is pretty much hack at this point. Like,
yep.
You don't want to make that joke. Everybody's made it. But also, I don't know much about hockey, so I had to find just a barely slightly less hacky joke, which is people from Finland have funny names.
They do. Well, it's like me. I like soccer. I enjoy watching it. I know the product. But how many times can people make the same Simpsons soccer joke with holds it, holds it, holds it? That came out like 94.
Or fake Madrid. Man, we get it. Fake Madrid.
Right. Yeah, exactly. All right. We'll cut you loose here. End on a high note there. Okay, so I saw your piece pop up for Forbes. You're doing a lot
of...
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, I'm blogging about comedy for Forbes for the next couple months, which is weird and random and kind of fun.
Right.
I've been doing some cool interviews. I did a cool interview with Chris Gethard and Rob.
Yeah, Corey. I meant to bring that up. I'm glad you said that, too. I meant to how he's trying to be, what, the modern-day Regis, or he's looking to fill in for...
Yeah, Chris Gethard. He was an old, like, comedy teacher and director of mine back in New York, like, a decade ago. And he's got his own show on Fusion. It's this very strange deconstruction of a talk show. And, yeah, he just was like, let's do it. Let's make me read this. I don't think it's going to happen, but he believes in himself, so we'll see.
He's a short white guy, so why not?
Man, I saw he did this show in New York when I was, like, 19. It was the funniest thing I've ever seen. He's this tiny, nerdy white dude from New Jersey, and the premise of the show is that Daryl Strawberry had to cancel an appearance doing readings from his autobiography, and so Chris Gethard has to replace him. And he just wrote these insane stories of, like, Daryl Strawberry fighting a police horse and, like, just, like, all these amazing things, but it's him doing it all as Daryl Strawberry. One of the best comedic things I've ever seen. So see that if it comes to town, which it won't, because I think Chris retired that joke, but...
Well, then, he's a big wrestling fan, yeah, so I like him for that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Exactly. He's that type of guy, and he's so funny. Yeah, so I'm bugging for explaining with a stranger, and then I got some other stuff coming up that I'll post about on Twitter where I'm at Spike Friedman.
All right. Well, great. We'll cut you loose on that one at Spike Friedman. Go follow him on Twitter. Follow his work. If you're in the LA area, go to his plays and whatnot. I would do that as well. But being kind of in Austin, Texas with a wife and a child, and I enjoy having both those things, I kind of stay in my home base here in Austin.